listening to the True Idaho News Podcast. Unfiltered news and opinion for the citizens of Idaho.
Hello and welcome to the True Idaho News Podcast. My name is Daniel Bobinski, editor of True Idaho News, and I thank you so much for tuning in. We have a special show for you here. We have some special guests that we recorded. Before I get to that and introduce them, I want to tell you that we are also on Google Podcast, Anchor, Spotify, Amazon, Rumble, BitChute, and iHeartRadio. So if any of those platforms are your favorites, you can find us there and share us with your friends. Before we get started, I want to give a shout out to our Triple Diamond sponsors. They are Tom Nopak with Picture Perfect Window Cleaning. If you need your windows cleaned in Southern Idaho, give Tom a call at 208-401-6265. He does window cleaning, power washing, screen repair, gutter cleaning. You can find him also at windowcleaningboise.com. That's Tom Lopak, 208-401-6265. By the way, mention you heard of him on the True Idaho News Podcast and get 10% off your bill. You can also contact Brian Hay with BH Consulting. They do computer repair, whether it's residential or commercial. He does software, virus repair, computer setups, networking, and multiple computers, all sorts of things. Give Brian Hay a call at 208-329-8020. That's 208-329-8020. Tell him, of course, you heard about it on True Idaho News. And finally, Mike Hahn, an associate broker with Home River Realty, a licensed broker since 2005, helping you with the purchase or sale of your residential or commercial property in Southern Idaho. Michael Hahn can be reached at 208-939-9033, or you can email him at michael.hahn, that's H-O-N, at pm.me, michael.hahn at pm.me, or give him a call, 208-939-9033. Our special show has to do with education, and our special guests are Stephanie Zimmerman and Myla Wood from Idahoans for Local Education. And of course, we also have with us our standard co-host, Josh Gibbons. Now let's go to the recording. With me today, via our recording system here, is our co-host, Josh Gibbons. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. And also, because we're talking about education, we have Stephanie Zimmerman and Myla Wood. Stephanie, hello.
Hello.
And Myla, hello.
Hey there.
So you guys started an organization that has to do with schooling and education. Give us like a 30 to 60 second brief overview of what you guys started and why.
We started a parents group called Idahoans for Local Education. We met back in about fall of 2012, when we both learned about Common Core. Myla came at it from a slightly different angle than I did, but we both learned about it and we both wanted to fight it. So we started this parent group and we've been involved in education policy ever since.
And that is kind of what I wanted to talk about. And that's why I asked you guys to be on the show. So thank you so much for joining us. What happened in Idaho on Monday night, the 7th of February, was a presentation by Corey DeAngelis. He's an educational expert, and he's promoting this educational choice bill. And the name of the presentation was called Fund Students, Not Systems. And one of the comparisons he made was that, you know, students should get the money and they should be able to spend that money wherever they go. Just kind of like, you know, you have food stamps. You don't make a parent go shopping at a specific location. They can shop wherever they want and use the stamps. Same thing with Medicaid, Medicare kind of thing, where they, you get the money, it goes to the various hospitals. You don't have to go to one specific place. He's arguing, well, shouldn't we be able to just give the money to the student and let the student take that money to whatever school he wants to? On the surface, it sounds like a great idea. Lots of good arguments that go with that. But talking with you guys, you have some questions about this. And Myla, you know, you had mentioned that there was a concern that you had. What was one of those concerns?
Well, one of the concerns is I have not seen any language for a bill written specifically for Idaho yet. And I have asked a couple legislators for examples, maybe from other states where Are we copying someone else's legislation? Are we watching or learning from some other state that has implemented this and seen the unintended consequences or seen the successes or seen, you know, what is happening? So I, there's just not enough information for me to really embrace this yet.
And Stephanie, any thoughts from you?
I actually contacted a legislator who is working supposedly on school choice legislation and asked her if I could look at it. And it's not ready yet. She doesn't have an RS for it. So, you know, we haven't seen it. We don't know what it is, don't know where it came from. And like Myla said, we don't know if there are any unintended consequences behind this.
Yeah. So this is one of the questions that I have. You know, my family, we homeschooled. And Idaho has some of the freest homeschooling laws in the nation. In fact, I think it is the freest homeschooling situation in the nation. And one of the concerns that I've heard is that with, you know, any kind of federal program comes strings. And one of the other things that my wife does now that my daughter's graduated is that my wife teaches at some homeschooling pods and she like homeschooling learning academies and those kind of things. I guess one of the questions I have is what if one of the students received federal money and brought that money to the academy? A valid question would be, would there be federal strings attached?
Well, with shekels come shackles, you know, that's what we like to say. More than likely, the minute those federal funds come in, there are going to be federal requirements that have to be met.
That's often the case, but like you say, we haven't seen the bill yet.
Right. And actually we worked with a legislator or with a candidate, I guess, that was running for office a few years ago. And this came up back then. And that was one of the cautions that Stephanie and I had with this candidate was, how are you going to untether from the federal shackles? So what can we do at the local level? Like, how can we prevent the money from leaving the parents' pocket and going to the federal government to then come back to us with these strings attached to it? So we were trying to make the point and then that with shekels come shackles. So there has to be some kind of a local mechanism in order for this to happen, in my mind.
Yeah. So I know that, you know, Idaho Freedom Foundation is very, very much in favor of this. And quite frankly, it's got a lot of positives. I look at it and I happen to agree with that whole concept that if you have a check, maybe, how did you describe it, Myla? A coupon?
A coupon. Yep.
Yeah. So if I get a coupon for so much dollars, then I should be able to take that to some place where I want to spend it. But I do agree. I think it probably sounds like a great idea to have some kind of language in this bill. If they're still writing the bill, if no RS, no routing slip has been yet established for this in the Idaho House, it seems like that ought to be some language in it that there's no requirement that federal restrictions be attached to receiving the funds.
If we could see the legislation, yeah, you'd think we could add that, but we're not being allowed to see it yet.
This is probably a good point for our parents to listen to you know, be in contact with your legislators and say, hey, make sure that there's no federal ties to this.
And I think too, I mean, a lot of the parents that are within this realm of homeschooling and Christian and private and pod and hybrid and all the different options we have here in Idaho, they're doing it for a specific reason, right? They're meeting the needs of their specific child. They're doing it to exit things like the mandatory federal tests or the data collection or whatever it is what their objection is. And so we just have to be really mindful that the shiny object in front of us labeled as choice is not actually undermining our actual choice as parents.
Yeah, I agree.
Just as a quick example of that, in Indiana, a number of years ago, they had a really wide open voucher system where any of the parochial schools could take vouchers. And there were a couple of moms who had their kids in a Catholic school, and they noticed Common Core coming in, and they were told that because they took vouchers, they had to use the same standards and system and everything that came attached with the funds. So, I mean, it's not like we don't have a history to fall back on or some examples of things that have happened in the past that come with these vouchers and this so-called school choice program.
Yeah, I'm recalling there was a movie put out here locally, I believe, called Trojan Horse. And it was about that kind of thing, where it was the government giving money for educational purposes. And then, of course, the restrictions came along with that. Because, you know, a lot of homeschoolers were going, oh, really? I can get some money. I don't have to pay for it myself. I can get some money from the government to help me with my costs on homeschooling my children. And so they took the money. But then they weren't allowed to teach some of the curriculum that they wanted to teach. For example, one of the nice things about, you know, homeschooling our kid was we were able to choose curriculum that used a Christian-focused theme. And so, well, in fact, it was kind of cute the way my daughter once asked, Mom, why do we always talk about God in every subject? And my wife's answer was great. It's because God is part of every subject. He created the entire universe. So he created everything. So God is part of every subject. Well, under those rules where you take the money from the state, you were not allowed to teach anything having to do with Christianity or the Bible in your classroom. You had to use state-approved curriculum. So it is a valid concern. It is a danger, I think, if somebody doesn't raise the questions about it. I do like the idea of funds following the student, not funding the system, but we do have to watch out not to fall into a trap.
Yeah, and I think too, one of the things that I'm seeing online in some of the education groups that I'm in is people bringing up the conversation of, okay, well then let's not fund the system. So does that actually mean that our community schools, as we know them, which some small communities, like for instance, Middleton, I mean, it's kind of a big deal. I mean, we as a community rally around Friday night football. Most of the kids that went to Middleton, you know, we went to kindergarten together. We went to the high school together. We still have lifelong friends in the system. So are we actually working to eliminate the local community schools in lieu of choice, where we can just simply exit and go congregate with like-minded people, say like in a medical charter or an arts charter or a homeschool pod of some choice? So are we really talking about the elimination of the traditional community public school system?
I didn't get that sense at that presentation tonight. I didn't get that sense. Josh, did you sense any of that?
No, not at all. No, the choice is still there if you want to. Now, look, of course, I'm not looking at a bill or anything because currently it's private property of whoever's going to be presenting it. But when we heard them talk about it tonight, it was made very clear that at the end of the day, the money follows the child, and it's to give them that choice that if a traditional school is not the best option for you, you can choose where your child goes. It doesn't eliminate it, because for many families, the traditional school format works. So,
yeah, and that's fine. I think what is nice is it just gives an option. So I think to Myla's concern, it might take some of that away, but not all of it. It's not going to eliminate it.
Yeah. So I just would, again, like to reiterate, I just would like to see the words. What are the actual strings attached to this choice coupon?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. And I would encourage everyone to be in touch with your legislators to find out if that is going to be in the bill. Don't just let them pass it without get that check. I'm all for school choice, but I'm also all for keeping the federal government out of our schools. By the way, another topic on education, NAMPA's superintendent has resigned. NAMPA, Idaho, They elected some rather conservative folks onto the school board. And as soon as they were sworn in, my understanding is the superintendent resigned. Myla, you live out that way. Is that what you heard?
You know what? I've just kind of heard rumblings. I think new school board members are actually really representative and very inclusive and are ready to represent all of Nampa and all students. And I think it's actually about, you know, doing what they can do to work together with the parents and the community to make their schools, you know, safe and better and a happy place for learning for all the kids. So I'm actually excited to see what happens in Nampa. I was sad to see the superintendent leave. It was unfortunate that the new members didn't have a chance to work with her and learn from her experience. I guess she just had other plans or whatever was going on there. But I believe the assistant superintendent took over that position for the interim. And I'm curious to see what happens with him, see what he can do with the school board and how they can collaborate and communicate and work together to move Nampa forward.
News reports say that Greg Russell was the assistant superintendent. He was selected to fill the interim role through the end of the school year. And apparently he's going to apply for the job when it opens up. But as you say, he needs to kind of see how it works out. The point being, we now have a new superintendent and a more conservative school board in Nampa. So it'd be interesting to see what happens out there with all these mandates and those kind of things.
Yeah. And I think the great thing out there is that a lot of the parents are just really happy to be included and have a voice and have a seat at the table. And I think that everybody, including the new interim superintendent, appears to be willing to listen and have everybody at the table, which I think is great.
Cool. Appreciate that. One more school topic, and I'll let you ladies go. It says here that Idaho is going to be needing 100 new schools by the year 2030. We got 8 years from now, they say we're going to need 100 new schools. Lots of folks moving to the state. What are your thoughts on that?
In the area where we live alone, it's pretty built out, but to the west of us, subdivision after subdivision after subdivision, and with all those subdivisions come kids and... yeah, we're going to require a lot more in the way of schools.
Hey, Josh, my understanding is that Idaho is the fastest growing state in the nation. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Yeah, and if you look at actually the redistricting itself, you'll see that kind of aligns with that. We went from having it to where I believe it was about 30,000 people per legislative district to now a growth of 5,000 more per legislative district. You think about that, but we're looking at people with kids, and a lot of people who have moved out here have rather large families. They're trying to escape a place like California where they feel limited on how they can grow their family. With that said, I think this kind of ties back to where school choice may be a good alternate option if, in fact, it does. We do get those answers clarified.
Yeah, it's going to be needed, I think. There's so many school options out there and so many people moving in. And I suppose if somebody wanted to look at a career, becoming a school teacher in Idaho is certainly a way to go. And by the way, if you get student loans, this is kind of a fun fact to know and tell. If you get a student loan and get a degree in education, they will cancel your student loan debt after 10 years of teaching. So I suppose it's like a 10-year investment, but they'll cancel it. So just a thought. If you're looking for a job.
Can I add just one more thing on the lots of school? So if we do need to build more schools, which it makes sense with people moving in, I would urge people to really start paying attention to things like helping growth pay for itself in your community, like talking with your county commissioners and your city councilmen and your highway districts and all those places, that they start to work on figuring out how to do impact fees for the growth to help make it so that current residents aren't funding the growth itself necessarily all on their shoulders. And then also if people will keep an eye out for things like urban renewal projects and try and keep those at a minimum, because those also take money from essential services like fire, police, and schools. So that's my two cents.
Josh, you have any comment on that?
Oh, sorry. I was reading up on that student loan forgiveness. Because look, I've heard a couple different things. I was like, well, wait, which is it? Because I recently heard that it's actually 11 years, but you actually still have to apply to get it forgiven. There was an expansion. It was originally Bush who enacted that program, but Barack Obama expanded it, made it to where more people could get that. There's also another option where if you work in a low-income area, you can have it forgiven after 5 consecutive years, up to $17,500 of it. So, sorry, that's where my mind was.
No worries. No worries at all. Well, cool. I'm so grateful, Stephanie and Myla, that you guys were able to join us on the True Idaho News podcast. You guys are awesome for coming on and telling us your perspective on what might be down the pike for us.
Thank you for asking us.
Thank you for having us, Daniel and Josh. We appreciate it.
You bet. Okay, Josh. So other news. You may or may not know, but I had Senator Kristi Zitto on my TV show last Thursday because she tried to save Idahoans some money and she got smeared by the establishment and they lied about her and they issued a statement from the leadership just absolutely smearing her. There was essentially lies. So those of you who may not know, you can go to True Idaho News and watch the interview that I did with Senator Zitto, where she explains in her own words what happened. But for right now, the grocery tax bill was stuck in a drawer. And we've talked about this in the podcast before. Josh and I joked about $75 to put gas in your car. That amounts to what we're going to get for this income tax break that sailed through the House rapid speed and went through the Senate. Well, Senator Zitto was a little bit upset that this grocery tax was just stuck in a drawer and wasn't going to get heard, when she and every other legislator that I talked to said they get lots of calls on grocery tax and property tax, hardly any, if any at all, on income tax. And yet that's what was pushed through, was a very watered down, cheap income tax reduction. Josh, you remember us talking about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the disappointing tax break of 2022 is what I call it now.
Well, so what happened is it went to the Senate and Senator Zitto tried to attach a grocery tax amendment to that so that they could pass it also as the grocery tax, since the tax people over in the House just stuck it in a drawer. Let's bring this to the floor and discuss it. And it was shocking. I mean, outright shocking that the leadership smeared her and voted against her. So the only people who supported her were the Democrats in the Senate. And so the Senate leadership puts out this letter that says that Zitto tried to kill the income tax bill and voted with Democrats. It's like, no, Democrats voted with her and Democrats voted for their constituents.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, I've heard two different sides of the story. Like if you look at the Senate, there's two people you can generally count on to vote conservatively. One is, of course, Senator Zitto, and the other one is Senator Bayer. Senator Bayer did respond to this and say that there was no vote in the Senate on grocery tax repeal. The vote referenced above was simply a procedural vote on whether or not HB 436 should be sent to the 14th order for possible amendments. She goes on to say that it was against grocery tax repeal is totally false. Everyone wants to vote to remove the sales tax on groceries, but that is not what this vote was. She's not wrong. It's not what that vote was. Nobody's saying that that's what that vote was, but Senator Zitto was trying to get grocery tax repeal added to the bill. So yes, what she is saying is accurate as far as that goes. But at the end of the day, no other Republican voted to have that done. No, Senator Anthon actually went as far as to try and silence her. So the whole thing is just extremely disappointing. I guess we're going to just have to be happy with the measly $75 that they're going to come to how they saved us when they come back home. Again, I would save more money if they left that alone and passed the grocery tax repeal. I would save more money in taxes.
We all would.
Yeah.
And it really does, as Senator Zito pointed out on my show, the grocery tax hurts the poor and large families the most. Because you've got to, you have, especially a poor large family, because you have to feed all those kids and you have to buy all those groceries and you have to pay all those taxes.
Yeah, not only does it hurt them, but it hurts our small business owners who live right on the border. I mean, for me, let's just be realistic. I'm going to be honest here and saying, if I lived in Payette, I would not grocery shop in Idaho. I would cross the border and I would go into Ontario because that money adds up. Then on top of it, they want to talk about being fair. Guess what? If I live in that border town and I'm shopping in Ontario, guess what I get at the end of the year? So when we're talking about things that are fair, the grocery tax is not one that is fair across the board. As you stated, poor families and also families with large, you know, amounts of people in it, tons of kids, they're the ones who suffer. And again, we can claim, well, hey, you know what? We have all these people coming and visiting. We need to be able to tax them. This is how we can do it. End of the day, you have a balance. And again, if I lived in Payette, I would buy in Ontario. And then I would also get a tax refund at the end of the year. Mm. There's so many things that people come to Idaho for. And the biggest thing is our outdoors. It's our hunting. It's all these things, all these adventures that people think of Montana and Idaho for. That's what they're coming for. And I promise you, we are taxing it enough as it is.
I think Idaho is one of five states in the nation that has tax, full tax on groceries. Some states have tax on some groceries, not all. Idaho is one of five that taxes all groceries. And to be calling ourselves a conservative state, I got some question marks there now.
Yeah, no kidding.
If nothing else, Brad Little has one heck of a PR team. He doesn't know how to, you know, govern exactly conservatively. I'm not saying he's done all bad. There's been some very good things that he has done. But when it comes down to protecting Idahoans, protecting their liberties and standing up for them in the face of tyranny, he has fallen down on the job and it's an embarrassment.
Yeah, he's fallen hard. No, broken clock is right two times a day. And what he's done is essentially that has been good. It's almost like throwing out a few dollars, right? You throw it out into a crowd of starving people. That's essentially what I see that he's done. He's put us in handcuffs, but you know what? He brought us a piece of bread. So, you know, if you look at it that way, I mean, everything that this governor has done, if you look at it as a whole, has been a negative impact on Idahoans.
I think you're right. I would encourage people to look up the website for the National Governors Association and take a look at all of the companies that are sponsors and supporters of the National Governors Association. Now, keep in mind, the National Governors Association issued their guidelines for what states need to do. Those guidelines were provided by the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization, not exactly looking out for Idahoans' rights. Brad Little just, you know, automatically, yes, we got to do this. And look at those companies that support that organization. None of those companies got shut down during the essential / non-essential shutdown back in 2020. So Brad Little is kind of a marionette to that organization. People should look into it and educate themselves on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything else you want to cover before we close?
No, I hope everybody has a wonderful week and we'll see what happens at the Capitol and keep everybody in tune to it.
Yes, lots of stuff going on. We've got some legislators who have agreed to be guests on the show. We'll have probably next week, we'll probably have a legislator on talking about what's going on down there. So stay tuned. We'll catch you all next week. Until then, be blessed.
You've been listening to the True Idaho News Podcast. Unfiltered news and opinion for the citizens of Idaho. Get more True News by visiting trueidahonews.com. If you'd like to support this podcast, visit trueidahonews.com/support. Thanks for listening.